But yeah, how do you sort of exist within and without of these systems that feel very pervasive and very constrictive? And I don't think the film has an answer. I don't think it's didactic in that way, but I think it's raising some of those questions of, well, what, how do we exist as humans in an increasingly inhuman world?
Today on the show, we are joined with actress and producer and many other things, Anna Maguire. Right now, her brand new film that she stars in, With Love and a Major Organ, is playing in theaters right across Canada. It's a cool film that incorporates drama and comedy and takes place in the world that feels familiar, but is also a bit otherworldly. Kind of reminds me of like some Tim Burton-ish live action, such as like a Edward Scissorhands and Beetlejuice, where it reminds you of real life, but with different rules to our universe. And even within the universe they created with Love and a Major Organ, there's a lot of deep metaphors going on. And overall, it's just a cool, unique experience. And also around the film, we get a little look into Anna's longtime career, as her first acting role was in the famous Saving Private Ryan. And cut all these years later to now, beyond acting, she's doing so many things in the film industry and has a lot of knowledge and advice to share for aspiring filmmakers. So yeah, let's get into it.
So I've been involved in the project for a little, I was involved in the project sort of before script stage, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, because I'd worked with Julia, the writer, on a short film, because I also write and direct. I had been put in touch with Julia, who had written a short play, because she's a playwright, about a woman who digs a hole, and it's sort of an extended metaphor for a young woman who's struggling with anorexia nervosa. And so we ended up talking together and working together and developing that further into a short film. And then Kim Albright, I'd actually worked with on a short film in London, in England. And she had asked me at a certain point, did I have, because she just moved to Canada and I will move back because she's from Canada. I ended up putting her in touch with Julia because I sort of felt like maybe they're sort of aesthetics or the way they sort of looked at things might be quite similar. And so it kind of, in a way, started there. It was started in this kind of lovely collaborative space. And I'm a big fan of the way Julia writes, and I'm a big fan of the way Kim visualizes the world, and her sense of fun. And so I was sort of involved in that process and helped develop a bit the script a little bit as well. I guess that kind of was helpful in relation to playing Annabelle, because it meant that we could have a very engaged sense of who this character was right from the start, or who it was with me playing it, which actually feels much more like a play version of it, because I think a lot of the time playwrights tend to sort of rework their pieces for different actors, for different conceptions. So that was quite nice, actually. I guess kind of a very indie way of working cinematically, but also a kind of novel way of working and trying to redraw bounds, trying to think about different ways of making work sort of outside of more traditional paradigms, I guess.
Yeah, that's so cool. And like, I just love the approach. Like, it's even, I really appreciate watching something and having the feeling where I'm like, oh, I've never seen anything like this before, you know? And it was kind of like a film, like even when it was done, it was kind of lingering with me. And like you mentioned, there's like a lot of like layers of metaphors and almost like things you catch later when you're thinking about it too. So yeah, kudos to you and like the whole team for kind of just putting together like this raw like art piece, you know?
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And even one thing I appreciated about your acting as well was when your character, like, I don't want to spoil too much for people who are going to watch this film, but your character kind of has like a shift in the middle. And when you had that shift, it was almost like watching two people. And like, I can kind of like compare it to like, maybe like in an older film, like you watch, I don't know, just like an example, like a actor, like an Arnold Schwarzenegger, one film, he's like a cop, another film, he's an kindergarten teacher, but he's still like the same guy. But you really made me feel like you were like almost multiple people. So I just kind of like want to know, is it like kind of like strenuous to like kind of get out of your personality and like lock into like these different characters?
Yeah, I mean, I that was like a huge part of the piece, right? That the character sort of has this huge shift in terms of how she exists in the world and how she's perceived because of something that she does out of maybe desperation, maybe love, maybe both. And yeah, I think it was kind of an interesting process working with Kim in terms of trying to build the layers of what that would look like. And just as much as we didn't want the second half to feel dead, we also didn't want the first half for Annabelle to feel just sort of like a sort of a pastiche of a manic pixie dream girl. So it's like, how do we find these sort of two, how do we find nuance in these two spaces? And then obviously in the second half, as Annabelle begins to sort of her light begins to fade. I don't want, yeah, I guess, yeah, I'm trying not to give any spoilers.
Yeah.
How to sort of continue to do that in a way that felt like in keeping with the metaphor of the world, so that it was a performance that existed, that was living and that was in metaphor, that yet could be grounded in reality. So it was really, so much of it was about trying to find ways. And I guess that's also part of the way the script works, because it's so, yeah, I guess a sidestep from reality. How do we ground that in things that we can see and feel and touch and represent in an honest way. So yeah, it was kind of an interesting shift. And I think sort of for the beginning, we really wanted to think about less about her being this sort of bright ray of light and sort of fun, kooky artist type. I think for me, it was more about really thinking about how sad she is actually, and how even though she sort of comes off as sort of wanting to feel everything and wanting to be connected in the world, and all those things are true, with that comes a lot of grief. And I think she doesn't really know how to process her sadness and her frustration and her grief. And I think that is probably on some level what leads to the literal and physical representation in the second half, but also sort of, I guess, metaphorically, why she ends up the way she is. Because I think we think about sort of mental health, we think about representations as such. It's so much of it is how do we process our griefs, our traumas, our societies, things that happen both internally and then in our sort of smaller familial environments, but then also in terms of the world at large and how we're moving through the world. And so yeah, I think there's something in there too. I guess everything sort of exists on many layers of metaphor, but absolutely the difficulty is how to make it physical, tactical, present, something playable, right? As an actor, how do you make it playable?
Yeah, and wow, like just kind of listening to you break it down like that too, that's just like another layer I wasn't thinking about throughout the film. And even like as I mentioned, as the film lingers with me, I'm just thinking of more and more things. But yeah, and even one thing I appreciated was also how this world had like almost the same social media we have, but a little bit more evolved. And that actually, me thinking about it was like actually scaring me. Like, and I watched a lot of like horror movies this week, and this was more scarier than like a lot of the things, because it almost seems like it can really happen in like the direction of what we're going, where I don't know, like it's our life's already changed so much with these things and like our pockets and everything. And just, I kind of want to get like your take of like kind of like putting this in the movie and also to like almost the extreme of like the toxicity that can happen with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, in the film, there's this sort of dinky little app called Life Zap that allows that sort of tells you how to live from when to do your laundry and when to buy detergent to when you should be getting married and how much time you should spend with your partner during the day to make sure you don't fight and stay connected. And so there's something very automated, I guess, about that sort of dystopia. But absolutely, I think that's what you're saying is interesting, because it is scary when you look at things that feel so close to where we are right now. And in the play, which was written in 2012, Julia had created. It's a different entity. This different. It works in different ways, but Mona, George's mother, engages with something called Google Shrink, which at the time seemed crazy, the idea to be able to sort of have therapy online in a kind of automated way. But lo and behold, so it sort of shifted again.
They predicted it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I hope it isn't a prediction, but unfortunately, it does feel like we're sort of heading more and more that way with how algorithms work, with how these sort of overarching trends of big data and how those can be used both to sort of control and affect us. And yeah, there's something going on there that we're all living within this sort of new paradigm, I guess. But how do we live within a status quo? I guess there's a sort of question there. How do we live in the world? Because if you're in a status quo, you can't, otherwise she just has to go live in a cabin in the woods, which I guess on some level she does, arguably. But yeah, how do you sort of exist within and without of these systems that feel very pervasive and very constrictive? And I don't think the film has an answer. I don't think it's didactic in that way, but I think it's raising some of those questions of, well, how do we exist as humans in an increasingly inhuman world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And even like how a lot of the characters in the world, they got so adapted to these apps, and almost this actually happened to our society. But that's like even like the next level. And I even found a moment in the film, like as I was like watching all this going on, my mind just trailed off into like a rabbit hole of like fear. And I actually had to rewind the movie. I was thinking so deeply about it. But again, it goes back to like all these different themes and layers. And it's just cool that that you guys made a piece that allows your mind to like think of like different stuff like this. And I think this is like would be amazing film for people who actually like study film or have like a film club or whatever, because I can imagine just like everybody watching this and getting like a different perspective or taking it a different way and then coming together and being able to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean we're very happy to share. I think it's we like to, I like, and I guess all of us on some level like to make work. I can't speak for everyone, but that isn't that opens up questions for an audience, for a viewer, for all of us to go sort of, hi, I'm here, are you there too? And it's a way of kind of connecting out and not necessarily telling people what to think or what they should do with their hearts, but it's asking the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I kind of was going back in your resume, and is it true that your first role was in Saving Private Ryan?
Yes, it is.
That's legendary. That's awesome. But
yeah,
and it's cool that just like over all these years too, like you stuck with like acting and everything. And I just kind of want to know, even like relating to With Love in a Major Organ, out of all these years, out of all the different unique scripts you've been a part of, maybe on a scale of 1 to 10, like where would With Love in a Major Origin or Organ like fit in that?
Oh gosh, I mean, they're all different, right? Like every project's different, and the way you come to every project's different, and the relationships you have with your crew, with your team, with your director, with your writers, with your producers, all, you know, it's different every time. And I feel very, very lucky actually that that I've ended up in the last few years doing a lot of very independent projects, independent cinema projects, which allows me to bring myself in many ways to the project and share the different elements of who I am, I guess, as a creator of things, not just sort of coming in as an actor, which is also a really nice experience. I've come in and done like a day or two on something. It will, again, that's such a lovely thing to come and be like, I don't have any other responsibility than acting this thing, which is so nice. But then you end up doing stuff like this, like Violation, like I just finished a little indie shoot of a first feature that's a sort of anthology piece that I wrote a section for that was shooting in Glasgow. And so you end up being so involved in the process, and I've been acting kind of, I guess, accidentally. It wasn't sort of a, just kind of happened. I just kind of fell into it when I was a kid. And I've been thinking a lot about that in the last few years, actually, sort of what that means, what my relationship to my work is based on having had this sort of strange relationship with it as a young person. But I feel very lucky that my path has taken me where it has, and that I am sort of part of building and developing and creating work in many different ways, not solely as an actor, because I think being a writer and a director allows me to act better in projects, and being an actor allows me to be a better writer and director. And so it ends up becoming, you end up just sort of, yeah, of course, like not bringing everything, every element of your sort of practice to every piece, but trying to sort of figure out how you can best support the vision of the person directing it and writing it, and how you can bring your own ideas to that space, and yeah, collaboration, I guess. And I think for me, the more I lean into the work that I do, the more I feel like collaboration is key.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it's cool to hear that you had like kind of like the shift into like the producing, writing, directing like type of role too. Cause as you talk about it, like it sounds like you just got like, it just seems like it's very fulfilling to you and everything. And did you realize like kind of like the moment maybe you were acting like for like a few years in it, where you had this other mind and you wanted to do more? Was it from being on sets and acting and seeing other people do these jobs and just kind of like think, hey, like I would fit perfectly for this, or just have your own like inspiration to do that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great question. I mean, I always loved being on film sets. I think film sets are kind of, they have the capacity to be really, really toxic, horrible places. But I feel for the most part, I was really lucky that I ended up on really pretty supportive and joyous film sets. Maybe I was protected sometimes because I was younger. I don't know. I feel lucky that I was protected, hearing many stories about young people who have not been protected in cinema. And but yeah, I think as I sort of started making more things, and I started directing, I was at university and I started directing some theater and writing some stuff, and I always took a lot of photographs, and yeah, I think I felt more and more like I just wanted to make things and tell stories. And I guess that's where it began, rather than, I think when I graduated from university, I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to be an actor now. And then very quickly, I realized that actually I didn't want to be an actor per se. I wanted to make things. And so sometimes that's acting, sometimes that's directing, sometimes that's writing, sometimes that's, you know, heck, I'll even sort of carry location mats and hold a boom pole for, I don't, you know, it's mm-hmm. not about the ego, it's about how do you get in, how do you make things that feel like they're trying to create something that's sort of more than the sum of its parts, and trying to, I guess, say something that means something somewhere in the world. That's such a big, broad idea, but yeah, I guess sort of trying to figure out how to be part of telling stories and supporting other people to tell their own stories, which then makes sort of more of a sort of sense of ecosystem rather than hierarchy or pyramid like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. That's cool to hear you break it down like that, Anna. Like I definitely myself, I really relate to that spirit too. Like some people know me as all these like different roles, you know, but it's like just a lot of things. And again, it's like almost just seeing things as like a bigger picture and just wanting to be not only involved, but like realizing you can help make all these things happen as well. And just kind of like finding yourself over the years. So it's kind of cool, like hearing you break that down as well. And one thing too, I really, really appreciate about this film is I feel like kind of in the mainstream right now, a lot of like these films are trying to like almost follow algorithms with like the superhero stuff. And like this film is truly like a piece of art. And I also feel like you guys, in a way, are taking a risk, you know, like kind of going against the grain of what maybe people expect in modern cinema or whatever. And do you ever feel like vulnerable, like putting a piece together like this and like maybe having its first screening, like, oh, I don't know how this is gonna go, or like, or do you just feel like super confident, like, this is my art, here you go, motherfuckers, boom, type of thing? Like, how do you feel like releasing something like this?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's I'm always scared or yeah, I guess not fear is like a funny thing, isn't it? I think there's so many kinds of fear and so many kinds of apprehension around putting things out into the world. I guess what I've been feeling more and more as I make more and more things is trying to not be afraid, which is difficult in and of itself, but trying to sort of trust that the thing that you've made will find its audience, and that audience may be five people, and that's okay too. And that audience may be 500,000 people. But not everything, you can't make something that is going to be for everyone. It's
True.
impossible. It will just be bland. And there'll be people who this film doesn't resonate for them, and that's fine. It doesn't need to. And then there'll be some people who it really resonates for. And I think if the more people that you can find who want to come on board and help get the film out into the world, I think about sort of our distributors in both Canada and in the US who believe in the film and want to share that with audiences, it's amazing. And then festivals have supported the film and have shared the film with their audiences. I think that's when we look at it in that way, and that it can be very organic, and it can be about trying to connect to non-cynically, you know, trying to connect to your audience and trying to find people who might get something out of watching this kind of a film. But I think what's amazing is that there are audiences for everything, and just trusting the thing that you want to make more than worrying about who's going to watch it. Again, obviously that there is sort of, you have to think about those things on some level, but I think if you think independent cinema, Canada is such an amazing place to make work, and I'm so grateful that I am Canadian and spent, you know, have lived for many years in Canada and get to be part of this really independent scene that is actually harder and harder to find in the world. I think it's harder and harder to make independent work, and I think it's kind of amazing that we get that opportunity.
Yeah, that's so awesome to hear. And even with these segments, I noticed a lot of different creatives themselves kind of gravitate to listening to these from some of the messages I get. And I just kind of want to know, would you have any like advice for like a aspiring filmmaker trying to like step foot into the industry?
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of film education in various different spaces, and I'm a big believer in trying to help people unlock their voice, their independent voice, their own what they want to say. I think that's probably the most important thing, is to try and figure out, and not necessarily figure out what you want to say and what your grand statement is, but pay attention to how you view the world and how you connect to people and what flights of fancy you have and what makes you laugh and what makes you cry and all those sort of those intricacies, because it's really about, I think, the more specific you can be about living in the world, the more universal that work ends up becoming. And there's a sort of inherent paradox in there that feels that I don't know, that the further I go with any of this, the more that seems true to me. So that would be my advice.
Yeah, well said. That's awesome. Yeah, thank you for sharing that with us too. And even going forward too, like I know you guys are focusing on this release, but I know you're a woman who's wearing like many different hats and everything. What other like irons do you have in the fire going on right now? Because I know there's got to be some. Like I could just tell from your ambition.
Well, I've been writing a feature for a while, of which I'm now beginning to we're beginning to sort of put the financing together, and we've done a few development programs, and we ended up going to TIFF's IFF and to the Nouveau Marché at the FNC last year, So we're just sort of slowly beginning to try and figure out how to, you know, funding cinema is hard. It's especially independent cinema. So we're just beginning to sort of put that all together. And then I've started writing a new project that I'm hoping to kind of do very, very indie, get back to my sort of super indie roots, which is kind of exciting to envisage. And then Julia and I are actually the writer of With Love. We're working on a project that for me to direct and that she's writing that we're developing together, because we sort of have built that relationship over years. And maybe a bit darker than With Love, but with very dystopian edges. So
I'm intrigued.
A few different things, a few different irons in the fire, a couple of acting jobs that I just did this new film called Public House, which is Martin Clark's first feature, which is exciting. And then Sally-Anne Fournier, she's a filmmaker in Montreal. I just shot a couple of days on a film called Au Revoir, Pluton. Just sort of continuing to build community and continuing to try and make my own work and to try and be a part of other people. So if I can do that, I'll be very lucky.
That's great. That's so cool to hear. And hopefully you can find some sleep in all those projects you're doing as well. I like really totally relate to your personality and everything. It's kind of cool to hear you just like always just busy and just keep going and everything too. And even as the life cycle of this movie, we'll continue to share little clips of this interview too. And I just want to say, like, I really enjoyed talking to you today. And hopefully we can have you back again on like another project, because you're always welcome here.
Well, that's very kind of you. And it's been such a pleasure talking today. So thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again to Anna for joining us. Like we mentioned in the intro, With Love and a Major Organ is playing right now across Canada. Check your local listings to see if it's in a theater near you. And yeah, before we go, we cannot run away without thanking all you legends on the Patreon page. And first up, big thanks to Mike Carniello of the Testing with Mike YouTube channel. If you're into electronics, technology, how they work, and most importantly, how to fix them, check out Testing with Mike on YouTube. Another big thanks to Amanda McKnight of Top 10 Nerd. Beyond being the host of Top 10 Nerd, talking to a million subscribers, Amanda has her very own YouTube channel that you can check out. If you're into comic books, video games, movies, all things nerdy, just type in Amanda McKnight on YouTube. Another big thanks to the wonderful Jenny Potter, the legend Devin McBride, back-to-back double impact Allens, the number one gent Alan Kent, and big wig Alan Briggs. Another thanks to our favorite soul singer, Saber, and last but not least, Francis Coffer, aka my mom. And if you want to support the show and also get these episodes early, raw, uncut, right when I'm off the Zoom call, I just post them, you can go to patreon.com/thecreativeimbalance. It's only $4 a month, and beyond having my thanks, you can just go to bed at night and sleep soundly knowing you're a badass motherfucker who supports raw, uncut, independent media, and nobody can take that away from you. You hear me? With that being said, we got so many episodes coming your way, so stay tuned and we'll catch you next time. Yeah.